What's up, everyone, and welcome to The Six. This is our weekly show where my good friend Gil and I talk about the favorite things that we've enjoyed this week, drawing from movies, music, TV, anime, comics, and video games. If this is your first time tuning in, welcome. If this is your second time, welcome back. Before we go forward, we'd just like to really thank everyone who's taken the time to listen to us, taken the time to visit our blog, read our posts. We are deeply humbled by your support and by all your positive feedback. We're going to kick it off with a few announcements. First of all, our podcast is available on iTunes now. It's called The Six, so you can just search for The Six and we should come up in the top results. Our logo is a tentacled six on a white background. We also have a blog now. You can find it at thesix.blog. What we do is that throughout the week we update it with lists, with things that we've been enjoying. We often use the blog as an opportunity to go deeper into some of the subjects that we discussed on the podcast. So be sure to check that out at thesix.blog. Now a little bit of housekeeping. Gil, at the end of last episode, I was feeling like a badass.
What? Really?
Being all rock star and shit. And I announced my Twitter.
Yeah.
And I announced the wrong Twitter.
Did you?
Yeah. So you can find me on Twitter at Bigori80. That's at Bigorri80.
That's not what you said last time?
Oh, I said at Bigori.
Oh. Right.
I don't know. It's not, I mean, I'm not sure if that exists, but it's definitely not mine.
I notice you have 10 followers. Congrats.
Thanks for that. I follow like 10,000 and I have 10 followings. It's a pretty, I'm pretty happy with that
ratio. It's a good ratio
so far.
Yeah.
Moving on with the announcements, we've got some pretty cool stuff lined up in the coming weeks, based on a lot of the feedback that we've received after the first episode. So we're going to be doing some pretty cool kind of themed episodes. Of course, we're always talking about the things that we're enjoying at that time, but there are some things that are kind of perennials for us, you know, that we're kind of digging all the time. So we're going to be doing an episode called Ultimate Power, where we will be discussing the things that really get us pumped. For Gil, that is...
Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Baby metal.
Exactly.
Working out.
Yeah.
Protein.
No.
Dragon Ball Z.
No. Joe Rogan, baby metal. I'll be talking about melodic death metal, bands like Dark Tranquility, Soil Work, Insomnium, of course, In Flames. Then we're going to do an episode called Acquainted with the Dark, in which Gil would be, he'll be discussing
the Dark Tower
series of books in anticipation of the movie coming out, and I'll be talking about the Dark Souls games. I pretty much play Dark Souls on a weekly basis. It's something that I really, really enjoy. I'm always finding something new to do in that universe, so we'll be delving into that. And then we'll be doing an episode called Wrath of the Norsemen, where we'll be discussing the recently published book, Norse Mythology, written by Neil Gaiman, and all things Viking in anticipation of the forthcoming Thor Ragnarok. So that's some stuff that's coming up. Now, for this week's episode, we will be talking about the Ghost in the Shell live-action movie starring Scarlett Johansson. We'll be talking about the new anime film Your Name, or Kimi no Na wa in Japanese. We'll be talking about the indie film I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore, starring Elijah Wood. We'll be talking about some of the awesome trailers that came out this week, the second season of the anime Attack on Titan, and we are going to be closing it out with some of our favorite anime music.
Don't you want to say what Attack on Titan is in Japanese?
Do you know it? You got me.
Ah.
Ataku on Titanu. And at the very end, we'll be talking about our favorite anime intros or favorite anime outros. And when you listen to this, there will be a new blog post on the 6.blog where we list some of our all-time top favorite anime music. So be sure to check that out as well.
And did you say we were going to be talking about trailers?
Yeah, yeah, we talked
about it. Yep. Sorry.
No worries. So how are you doing, by the way?
All right, man. Ups and, this week has had ups and downs for me. I've lost considerable amounts of muscle mass because all I do is sit and play Persona. So that's good and bad. The Blackhawks are not doing too well in the first round of the playoffs, so I'm a little down about that. Mm. But otherwise, it's been a good week for me. What about you?
Yeah, pretty good week. Pretty busy week. I'm glad you mentioned the Persona thing. So you may have noticed when we listed the topics, we will not be discussing video games this week because we're both basically playing Persona.
Yeah.
I'm either playing Persona 5 or still Zelda Breath of the Wild. So we have not much that's new to report on that front. Just a very quick update on games, though. If you have a Switch, I recommend that you check out the game Graceful Explosion Machine. This is one of the nindies, or one of the independent games on Nintendo Switch that just came out.
Is that what they're calling them? Nindies?
Yeah.
That's
they
cute.
Did a really cool like Nintendo Direct a few weeks back where they just announced a ton of independent games that are going to come out for the Switch. And they called it the Nindies presentation. So I think it's a name that's stuck because, you know, it's pretty catchy.
Nice.
So Graceful Explosion Machine is a old school side-scrolling shooter that came out for the Switch. It's very pretty, and it's really like cool, like hardcore white knuckle Twitch action. So check that out if you have a Switch. If you have a PlayStation 4, I would recommend that you give a try to Drawn to Death. It's a new game by David Jaffe, one of the minds behind God of War and the Twisted Metal series. Drawn to Death is free this month if you have PlayStation Plus.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a first-person shooter, basically designed as if, you know, if you were to take the sketches drawn by a teenage boy in his notebook, you know, while he's in class, you know, bringing that entire world to life. So it's got a really cool, unique aesthetic to it. And yeah, it's free. You know, if you have PlayStation Plus, so you've got nothing to lose.
What kind of things did you draw in middle school?
Basically, I drew like the Metallica logo over and over again. I would just draw like Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, Kiss, AC/DC over and over again. So I wasn't really that creative.
Nice.
When it came to like doodling in the margins.
That's cool.
And if you have an Xbox One, man, I don't know what's new on Xbox One, but in case you've never played it, go back and check out Sunset Overdrive. This is one of my favorite games of this generation. It's made by Insomniac, and just loads of fun. Like, really, really cool, like, third-person action. Really cool movement. Just, yeah, a blast. So, now, let's jump into our first topic for this week, Ghost in the Shell, the live-action movie.
Yeah, starring Scarlett Johansson, Juliette Binoche,
yeah,
Beat Takeshi,
yeah,
and I'm forgetting so. Oh, Michael Pitt.
Michael Pitt, who does he play?
He plays Kuz or Kuze.
Oh, the CEO guy. No,
no, he plays the like the antagonist.
Oh, right, you're absolutely right, Michael Pitt. Yeah, of course, Boardwalk Empire. Love that dude. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah,
awesome. All right, man. So Ghost in the Shell.
Go ahead. Let's hear it. Let's hear your bullshit. All right. Sorry. I promised I wasn't going to scream.
Garbage truck on fire. Crashes into a waste management facility. Keeps going. Drives off a cliff into a landfill. And I don't know. And then some like birds come and crap all over it or something like that.
What does that have to do with anything?
That's how I feel about the movie.
You're wrong, but okay. Please continue.
Yeah, I really didn't like this movie. I thought it was very bad. I think that its status as a box office flop And its current rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which I think is like a 47, is well-deserved. I think it's a complete mess. And I think that they totally missed the point of the source material. I mean, to begin with, they traded out the, I think, incredibly interesting storyline of the original 1995 Ghost in the Shell motion picture, the anime, for a typical kind of bad guy CEO storyline that we've seen time and time again. A bunch of shootouts, you know. I have no idea why there suddenly need to be so many shootouts in a Ghost in the Shell movie. When they're not having a shootout, they're having a very kind of basic and direct discussion about, you know, being a robot, being a human, so on and so forth,
mm-hmm.
which I think is in direct contrast with what Mamoru Oshii did with the original anime, where he would just kind of show you these long contemplative scenes where you really, it just kind of would let the movie breathe. And it would let you think about these things on your own with them, without them having to spell it out for you.
Oh, but they did. Come on. Let's be fair. They did. There's a lot of like moments where characters dive into these 3-4 minute monologues about what it is to be, what it is to be conscious. Like, mm-hmm. like when the Major and Bato discussed that on her boat in, I'm talking about the anime.
Mm-hmm.
So that they do spell it out.
Yeah, but I think it's a lot more sophisticated.
It is sophisticated, mm-hmm. though. Yeah.
And it's done a lot more elegantly,
okay.
Than in this movie. So basically, yeah, I mean, it's a movie. Show me, don't tell me. You know, like, show me what is going on. Don't feel the need to, like, write it directly into the script and have the character say to us, like, oh, I'm having all these thoughts, you know, and I'm having all these doubts about my identity, and so on and so on.
Right.
I also thought that there was a lot of like overuse of the same exact shots. You know, I feel like every single time they kind of pulled up from the story and gave you like the, you know, bird's eye view, it was always downtown. It was always full of holographic images. I can't remember how many times I saw like holographic carp kind of flying through the streets of Tokyo, or like the same images time and time again. And that really... And that's funny, because that's one of the things that when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, this looks really cool. I want to see this on a big screen. You know, I don't want to just like find a torrent or whatever.
Right.
But it was one of the things that became kind of a drag, that after the fourth or fifth time I'd seen it, I was like, all right, I get it. The future is about holographs. And then the other thing that I disliked, that I think really takes it out of its background as an anime, is that there's a very clear distinction between good and evil. You know, Section 9 is good, and then you have a bad guy, a very clear bad guy on the other side. And that that to me is really unfortunate, you know, because I think the original Ghost in the Shell movie and so many anime movies and anime TV series and OVAs, one of their main appeal to me is this not clear distinction between good and evil, but rather, you know, the antagonistic relationship between two different worldviews. And I think that that's also something that's characteristically Japanese that I think they totally missed. I have to say, the things that I did like about this movie, which were just two, basically, were the casting of Bato. I thought that guy did a great job. He's a Danish actor. His name is Pilo Aspik. That's my butcher pronunciation.
I'm glad.
Anyway.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, I'm glad you know how to pronounce the name, because I looked him up on IMDb and I was like, boom. I'm just going to leave that up to Lewis.
Yep. Not even going to try. but yeah, I thought that guy was great.
He was great.
I don't think I had ever seen him in anything before.
Nah.
But he seemed really familiar. Like, he's got like a Stephen Dorff kind of vibe to him. But he wasn't Stephen Dorff. And I think he did really well. I think overall, like, trying to cast Bato is tough, because in the anime, in the series, in the comics, like, he, you know, he's huge. He's a really big guy.
Yeah.
And I think he has a really unique personality.
It's yeah.
kind of a balance between his, like, kind of, he's like the stoic, strong, silent type.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's like kind of tender and has a good sense of humor and takes care of these dogs and all this shit.
Right.
But I think they got as close as one could expect with this guy. So I liked him in the movie. And, of course, I liked seeing Takeshi Kitano in the movie because I loved him. He is one of my all-time favorite actors and one of my absolute favorite directors. His movie, Sonatine, that he wrote, directed, I don't know if he wrote, he definitely directed and stars in. And his movie, Hanabi, that he also directed and stars in, are two of my all-time favorite live-action movies. So,
wasn't he also in Battle Royale?
Sure. Yeah, he plays the like the coach. Teacher. Yeah, or the coach in Battle Royale.
Yeah.
So Takeshi Kitano, I'll always, you know, be happy about him being in a movie. But I did think that his performance was kind of phoned in this time. I did really like that, like, everyone in the movie speaks English, but he speaks Japanese. You know, he's just like, fuck it. He's like, yeah, I'll do your fucking movie, but I'm speaking Japanese, so deal with it. Figure out a way for that to make sense. And that's it. So in a nutshell, those are my thoughts. What did you think?
I think you're wrong. Okay.
I kind of saw this coming.
I thought it was a very solid sci-fi film that, you know, I as I was watching the movie, and there are some scenes that are straight lifted from the original anime film. To me,
a lot of scenes,
right? And but those scenes to me, like, it felt like they were done with attention to detail and with care, and it felt like it was an homage to the original. I felt like it was trying to pay respect to the source material, and especially in regards to the imagery more than anything else.
That's the problem right there. I think my opinion is that, and I'm going to let you finish.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
But I think that the problem was that they focused too much on the imagery and came in with a script that, in my mind at least, didn't fit. Like, it just, there's no need for this screenplay to go with this universe when you have so much quality source material already that you could have pulled from.
But you see, it's my understanding that they didn't want to just pull from the original film, but they also wanted to pull from the comics or the standalone complex series, and they mixed a few of those storylines together to create what we saw. I didn't have an issue with that. I thought it was, again, a very respectful of the source material. It didn't feel to me like a Hollywood take on an anime so much as it kind of felt more like an international. Maybe it's in part because of the casting. You have Juliette Binoche.
Mm-hmm.
You have Michael Pitt.
Mm-hmm. I hated her character, by the way.
I hate your character, but that's different. Anyway, you have Juliette Binoche, you have Takeshi Kitano, you have Michael Pitt, and even Scarlett Johansson is a proven entity as far as the international scene in regards to movies. Lucy was a huge hit,
right,
outside the U.S., and, you know, all the Avengers films are, like, huge in China and whatnot. Right. So, to me, maybe that's part why, but it felt like more of a, yeah, like a, almost like a, it reminded me maybe like Luc Besson's take on Ghost in the Shell. I didn't mind that.
I think that would have been a lot better.
He probably would have gone balls to the wall and stuck to some of the more
out there,
deeper aspects, yeah, of the original. I didn't have an issue with the direction they took it, though. I still felt like it was worthwhile. I thought it was a good cyberpunk science fiction story. As far as the movie being a flop, by the way, totally untrue. Yeah, it flopped here in the U.S. It made just under 40 million. The budget was 110 million. But so far, worldwide domestic gross has been somewhere around 150. So, yeah, it hasn't taken here in the U.S., but outside the U.S., it seems to be doing really well.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
And in regards to how the movie looks, I thought it looked gorgeous, man. I didn't pick up on like a lot of the imagery and stuff being used again and again, but I thought what was there looked really good. I thought it was a good vision of a near future. And man, I really enjoyed it. I thought, Takeshi Kitano, he kind of put in a straightforward performance. I kind of felt that way about Juliette Binoche too, although I love seeing her.
She was always crying in every scene, or like on the verge of tears.
Well, I don't blame her, considering, you know,
the movie that she's in.
Yeah.
She's like, this is what my career has come to.
No,
what the fuck am I doing?
I doubt that. And Scarlett Johansson, I thought did a fine job to me.
I thought she did a terrible job.
To me, I thought she moved weird.
Yeah.
But that made sense, given that she's...
Not if you watch any of the source material. Like, she doesn't move that way in the anime motion picture.
But does it have to be like that?
It doesn't... It's not that it doesn't have to be like that, but it didn't look good, I think, on film, the way that she moved and the way that she stood there with, like, her arms kind of hanging in a dead-looking way. Yeah. And there was no... I just thought that there was no good reason for her to go in that direction. I think that Scarlett Johansson acting like she does as Black Widow would have been a much more convincing Major than the one that we got in this movie.
Maybe. I don't know. I can't think of her playing Black Widow and not think of her one-liners and and romance with the Hulk.
Well, right. I mean, Bato. One-liners, I feel, are a part of the Major in the manga and the anime TV shows and the anime movie. So that wouldn't have been completely... But
she
had
some in there in when she would chat with Bato and whatnot.
Right. But I mean more about the way that she moves, not so much about like the way she delivers dialogue in the movie. The way that she moves in the movie looked a little bit off. And in general, just the way she looked on screen in this movie seemed a little bit off to me. When she was cast, I thought, wouldn't have been my choice, but I wasn't like completely against it, especially when the first or two teaser trailers started coming out.
Yeah.
And it looked kind of legit. But I think that in retrospect, I think a different actress might have been a better pick. Somebody like, I don't know, for some reason, Jessica Chastain is the name that keeps coming up in my mind.
No.
Yeah, just, I don't know. She's got a different quality to her. I think that it was not good. I don't think that this was the right choice for this movie, in my opinion.
What do you think of Michael Pitt? He was my favorite.
I hated his character.
Oh.
I always love Michael Pitt. I really liked him in Boardwalk Empire. I really liked him in The Dreamers. But I think that his character was just a mistake in this movie. To have this kind of like terrorist antagonist who then turns out to be the victim, it just didn't feel like Ghost in the Shell to me. And I think that especially when you are replacing the Puppet Master from the original movie, who's an extremely compelling character, with this, it's like, come on, guys. Like, you could have done a lot better. What it felt like to me is that they took, like, 200 stills from the anime, put them on a wall, and then just told the guys that wrote the screenplay, like, all right, tell me the story. What do you think this movie's about? And then they came out with something totally different from what the anime is.
I don't think it was totally different. I think it borrowed a lot from the anime. I think it's almost like a Western take.
That's the problem.
Western ideology in terms of, you know, the filmmaking, where certain things, it's they're less likely to explore big concepts and they focus more on the characters. And they do try to explain things a little too much, even with the Major. But at the same time, you know, I did kind of like what they did with the Major in regards to her past. I'm not going to say what it is, but it gave me that's something that, as far as I know, it was never in any of the series or the original film.
No, not that I know of either, no.
And but I liked it because it kind of gave me it made me feel kind of happy for that character in a sense, and in a way, and without giving anything away, and in the same way that seeing Bruce Wayne at the end of Dark Knight Rises
achieve some closure,
yeah, a little bit of closure, yeah, and like I've been I love Ghost in the Shell. Huge fan. Huge fan of the Major as a character. All of it. So seeing that side of it, kind of, I don't know. It made me feel a little happy.
I hear you. Yeah, that was one of the things that I found interesting. The direction that they took with her and her past, and where that leads at the end, I thought was interesting. It really kind of, yeah, I raised an eyebrow. So that was cool. But yeah, overall, I didn't like it. I would say if you have any interest in this movie, go watch the anime movie from 1995 if you haven't seen it. Watch Standalone Complex or watch one of Mamoru Oshii's other huge movies like Pat Labor 2 or Pat Labor 1. So I would say stay away.
I would say watch this movie first. If you haven't been exposed to the source material, judge it based on its own merits and then check out all the other stuff and be blown away.
Fair enough. So moving on.
That was good. We didn't argue. We did, you know.
Just a little bit.
That's all right. Let us know on Twitter if you agree with Lewis or I, because I think it's a divisive film, and I think some people are going to like it, and some mm-hmm. people are totally going to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all that SJW whitewashing bullshit, don't worry about all that. I think it's a non-factor.
I think that's a moot point. I don't care about that at all.
Yeah.
Agreed. So that's not. Yeah, I wouldn't bring that into the discussion. So, speaking of anime or anime-inspired films, the other movie that I saw this week on the big screen was the 2016 blockbuster hit, Your Name, Kimi no Na wa in Japanese. Gil, this movie was the second top-grossing domestic film in Japan.
So it probably made like $2 million.
No, Japan is a big country. There's a big population.
Okay.
So bad. It's the second top grossing domestic film after Spirited Away.
Ah,
so
wow.
A very good company.
Okay.
And the fourth all time top grossing film after Titanic, Frozen, Spirited Away, and then Your Name. It's, it's a really great movie. It's based on a book that I think was also very popular.
And a book?
What?
A book? Mm-hmm. Not a manga?
A book.
Okay.
Yeah, a novel. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's sitting at 97% on Rotten Tomatoes.
You know, Rotten Tomatoes percentages don't mean shit. And if you're the type of asshole, I know you're not, but if you're the type of asshole that pays attention to that before going to see a movie, you should probably just like kill yourself. Okay, you shouldn't kill yourself. You should probably just apologize to your mom for, like, sucking. Because, for example, The Fountain, one of the greatest films of all time.
Yeah.
Holler, if you agree. I don't hear anybody hollering. But if you agree, that movie is, like, 40% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
Just, I had to throw that in there. Okay. Continue, please.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, so this movie is playing in Miami at O Cinema. It's playing until this Thursday. So if you have a chance to see it, I think they have 7 and 9 or 9:15 showings every night. Go check it out. It's a really beautiful film, and it's definitely one that you should try to see on the big screen if you have the chance. And, you know, at the same time, you get to support O Cinema, which is our, I would say, marquee independent cinema here in Miami. They have one location in Wynwood, which is the one that's playing this movie, and one in Miami Beach. So
can you tell us a little bit about, like, the synopsis or the themes they deal with? Or?
Sure. So it's a really charming, delightful movie. It starts off as kind of a Freaky Friday rom-com, you know, where two people are, like, switching places,
mm-hmm.
you know, like their mind is in the other's body. And the interesting thing about it is that it's two people that don't know each other at all. They've never met. It's a teenage high school boy and it's a teenage high school girl. The boy lives in Tokyo. The girl lives in a small town. And they're switching places. And they start kind of communicating, leaving notes for each other, basically in their sleep. You know, they'll switch and then they wake up. You know, the boy wakes up in the girl's body and vice versa.
Oh, cool.
And it's a lot of fun. I mean, if you enjoy anime and if you enjoy stuff like Ranma One Half, it goes without saying that you should check out this movie, especially if you can see it on a theater. But then it becomes something much, much deeper and much resonant. And the tone turns from rom-com into something, I would say, more mature, something almost elegiac in nature. And it becomes a really, really beautiful movie, very affecting movie. You know, I think you'll walk out of this movie thinking about a lot of things, dealing with emotions. It becomes like a very nostalgic movie. And I think that specifically it deals with the feeling of feeling nostalgic for something, but you don't know exactly what it is.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So I loved it, man. I actually saw it for the first time on a flight. And I definitely wanted to have the chance to see it on a big screen, and I'm glad I did because the animation in this movie is great.
I was going
to
ask about that. Animation
is fantastic.
Nice.
There's one scene specifically that sticks out to me where they're doing kind of a ceremony in a Shinto shrine, you know, and it's a lot of like dancing and movement and stuff, and that's animated beautifully. And then there's another sequence later in the movie which is also really, really beautiful. So great animation, really cool music. I really enjoyed it, at least, by a band called The Radwimps, and their music comes up like several times during the movie. And yeah, check it out, man. I would say, like, give it a try.
Cool.
I think you'll enjoy it.
Nice.
Yeah. You just saw another movie, though, right?
I did.
It's called I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore.
Thank you.
Tell us about it.
Okay, so it's an independent film. It premiered at Sundance this year in January. It won the Grand Jury Prize for Drama. It stars Melanie Lynskey is the main character, and she's I knew she looked familiar, but I couldn't place her. I looked her up on IMDb. She plays the best friend to Kate Winslet in Heavenly Creatures.
Nice.
Yeah.
Dude, that's a great movie.
That is a great movie. I love that movie. Peter Jackson.
Yeah, that's right. If you haven't seen Heavenly Creatures, check out that movie.
Absolutely.
It's a really, really awesome movie about two teen girls that become obsessed with Orson Welles.
That's right.
And it's one of Peter Jackson's earlier films.
I think it was Kate Winslet's first film.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow. Okay.
If I'm wrong, let me know on Twitter. Yeah.
Cool.
But yeah, so she plays the main character, and then Elijah Wood, I saw it because I was listening to a podcast from Nerdist, a wonderful podcast in which Chris Hardwick interviews Elijah Wood, and I'm a huge Elijah Wood fan.
Yeah, me too. Know,
because of, well, fuck, everything, the Faculty.
The Lord of the Rings.
Mainly Lord of the Rings, Frodo. Sam, my Sam.
And what else? Sin City?
Sin City? Dude, he's a Green Street Hooligans. This guy's been making a lot of like cool small films. He made a movie not too long ago called Maniac. Last episode I said American Horror was dead in terms of films. Maniac, unfortunately it's no longer on Netflix. Netflix, you're dropping the ball when it comes to movies.
I have no idea what's going on over there, man.
Yeah, seriously. Like, that's no longer on there. And that's a fantastic movie. Totally worth renting or purchasing on iTunes, though. Very cool, very well-made horror film. But yeah, Elijah Wood, he's been playing a lot of, shit.
Wait, can I tell you my favorite Elijah Wood?
I bet I can guess.
What?
Indian in the Cupboard.
No, I don't know what that is. No, dude, do you remember Punk'd, the MTV show?
Yeah.
With Ashton Kutcher?
I fucking hated that show. It gave me anxiety.
So there's an episode of Punk'd where he punks Elijah Wood.
No.
And, Elijah Wood is like in the car with a friend. And I don't know how they set it up, but somehow he ends up like going into like this back alley or what looks like the back of a Publix and throwing, I think, a cigarette into a dumpster. And then the dumpster like blows up.
Oh,
like just insane. It blows up and like some shit falls and it's just like big destruction. And so this like cop pulls up and he's like, what are you guys doing? And so on. And Elijah Wood is like, you know, he's like really apologetic and he's like saying that he has no idea what happened or why this happened. And he has this line where he's like, sir, I am an honest man.
I played Frodo. Come
and
on.
That's exactly. And that's what I always think of when I think of Elijah Wood.
That's pretty cool. I'm gonna have to look that up on YouTube.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But yeah, so it stars these two actors, among others. And so the basic, let me just say that it's...
When did this movie come out?
It came out this year, 2017.
Oh, okay. Sundance. Holy shit. So it just came out.
It came out in Sundance in January, and Netflix immediately picked it up for distribution.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it's on Netflix.
Sweet.
I would say, honestly, like, it's very refreshing. It's quirky. It has very instantly likable characters, especially Linsky and Elijah. And I promise within the first 5 minutes of watching it, you'll be hooked. If you want to, I'm going to go into the basic premise of the movie and just give very minor spoilers for the first few minutes of the film. But okay. If you don't want to hear that, just skip ahead. You'll know that we're past the premise part because Lewis, I'm going to make Lewis sing some Taylor Swift. So just keep hitting forward 15 seconds until you hear Lewis singing. All right? You're down for that, right?
Let's see.
All right. And all right. So anyway, here it goes. So Linsky plays a character, Ruth, who's a beer-drinking nursing assistant. She's not too thrilled with her life at work. She's not too thrilled in general. Sorry, my phone went off. So she feels like the title of the movie says, she feels like she doesn't belong in this world. She thinks that people, and I think in this sense, the movie is very appropriate for the strange times that we live in. Holy mother of God. Hold up. I'm really sorry about this. All right.
Nice one, dude.
Sorry about that. So unprofessional. All right. So she feels like the world is fucking nuts and people are assholes. And a lot of times, of course, there's nice people in the world too. But like, she doesn't understand why people can't just treat each other better because we'll be able to enjoy this very temporary amount of time we have in reality. And that's something that, you know, hit with me. And Elijah Wood plays her neighbor, kind of an eccentric metalhead that likes pumping iron in his backyard.
Really?
Yeah, dude, yes.
So totally against type.
Totally against type. He's been playing against type in a bunch of roles ever since he finished Lord of the Rings. And yeah, no exception here. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Maniac. Mm-hmm. Watch that.
Cool.
So basically what happens in the film is she gets her house broken into and she goes to the cops. Cops don't give a fuck. And so she decides to kind of go and take care of matters on her own with the help of her neighbor, Elijah Wood. And at first, the movie, feeling-wise, it reminded me a lot of two movies that I love, Zombieland and Adventureland.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love both those movies.
Yeah.
Adventureland was really awesome.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you know what I'm...
I still want to rewatch Zombieland.
Did you not like it or something?
No,
or?
I loved it.
Oh, okay.
I just saw it only once, and it's a movie that I'm always thinking, like, man, Zombieland, that was such a good time. I want to go back and see that.
Yeah, it's totally worth revisiting, for sure. So it kind of has, like, it's something in common feeling-wise.
I'm sold, man. All you had to say was Adventureland and or Zombieland.
I figured.
And I'm 100%, and I'm going to go check this shit out.
You
got
to check it out. Everybody has to check this movie out. It's super refreshing. It's very funny. It's some of the humor is dark. And then the movie... Totally, it's written and directed by the gentleman, what's his name? Macon, M-A-C-O-N, Macon, Blair, and is his last name. And he produced the Green Room and Blue Ruin, which are two like highly acclaimed.
I haven't seen either of those.
I haven't either, but I'm totally going to check them out now just because of you know, any kind of relation to this movie.
Sounds good.
So the movie kind of changes gears a little bit into the narrative, and it where it goes from there was totally unexpected and
okay, no spoilers.
Intensely enjoyable.
That's sweet.
That's it.
So should I do the Taylor Swift now?
Yeah.
Say you'll remember me.
Oh my God, that's what you're going with?
Standing in a nice dress, staring at the sunset, babe. All right, spoilers.
You got to go longer, dude.
No, that's all I'm doing.
All right.
But red lips and rosy cheeks. That's it.
Aw.
So, cool, man. I'll go check that movie out. And you know what other movies I'm dying to check out? Those movies for which trailers dropped this week.
Yes.
Holy shit.
All right, what are we starting off with? Big Daddy?
Yeah.
So, yeah, as the whole world knows by now, the trailer, finally, the much-anticipated trailer for...
It's not really a trailer. It's a teaser.
It's a teaser. Yeah. Okay, yeah, it's a teaser.
It's a very tight teaser.
For The Last Jedi came out, and I gotta say, I was left...
Wanting more.
Wanting so much more,
like,
dude.
Come on, give me more.
So what'd you think of the trailer?
Ah, it looks amazing.
Yeah.
You know what it reminds me of?
Mm.
One of my earliest memories, I must have been like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years old. Being at an Eckerd Struggs.
Yeah.
This is like old school. With my mom when I was very, very little. And, like, being in the toy section and seeing the, you know, original Kenner action figure of an Imperial Guard from Star Wars. And just seeing, like, that black box with, like, the red outline and the Imperial Guard. And there was, like, a picture of the guard in the movie. And I'm not even sure if I had seen Star Wars yet at that point.
Yeah.
But seeing that shit and it just, like, blowing my mind... just something about the aesthetics of it and just kind of obsessing over this image for a long time.
Cool.
And this is what this trailer was to me. You know, they showed us very, very little.
Yeah.
There's a part in which they show us like some story stuff happening. You know, like there's like a base being blown up, it seems.
Yeah.
There's what looks like Leia looking over like at some plans, you know, some like holographic image.
Right.
But besides that, there's like what looks like Kylo Ren's helmet on the ground.
Shattered.
Yeah. But besides that, you know, more than anything else, this trailer was about Rey training, you know, in a very kind of Empire Strikes Back kind of way.
Yes.
You know, instead of it being like in a dank swamp, it's in Ireland. Right?
Right.
Like in a beautiful, like rocky island in the middle of the ocean. And I think what's really intriguing to me, and I'm sure to everyone, is the last line in the trailer when Luke says, you know, I only know one thing or something like that.
Yeah.
The Jedi must end. And it's like, oh shit, what does that mean?
So what does that mean?
I have no idea. I think
some people are saying that Luke's going to go dark side or that Rey will.
It could. I doubt that.
I don't think so. I don't think so in either case.
Yeah. I think that it's more likely that Luke goes to the dark side. I doubt that Rey would. What it means to me is kind of that, like, he, you know, he's looking at the legacy of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And how much destruction and pain and suffering Darth Vader caused. You know, how much pain and suffering and so on Kylo Ren has caused. And he's like, that's it. You know, this can't be a part of the world anymore because, unfortunately, with this much power comes great responsibility. No, but it comes also like this ability to destroy, you know, that I think he feels that it might be necessary to put an end to.
That's kind of what good. I think. That's good. It. I didn't think about that. Yeah. I thought something different. I thought, okay, so in the Force Awakens, they Snoke's, right? That's
yep.
his name?
Yeah.
Snoke's was talking about how Kylo...
Big holographic Gollum, basically.
Right, right. He was talking about how what makes, at least as far as I remember, what makes Kylo powerful was not only his major dark side powers and inclinations, but the fact that there was still a bit of light within him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking they're going to forward the mythology of the Sith and the Jedi to something we haven't seen before. And I admittedly, this is not entirely my original thought. I read an article, which you should check out on birthmoviesdeath.com. And so what I think Luke is referring to with that in mind, he has in the trailer Rey reach out, right? And what does she see? She sees the light, mm-hmm. the dark, and the balance.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I have a feeling that Rey also, she's like Kylo, but she leans towards the light. But maybe there's some sort of darkness that we haven't seen, maybe in regards to her past. And I'm thinking Luke is maybe talking about moving on to a philosophy that's not Jedi, not Sith, not these polar opposites, but somewhere in the middle is the way forward.
Interesting. I feel like that would be really getting back to the beginning, because I felt that, one of the things that I found really compelling about the kind of philosophy of Star Wars when I first started getting into it and kind of delving deeper into it was this idea of a balance between light and dark. This idea of this force that encompasses both sides. So I think for them to go in that direction, I think would be really true to the series, and I think would be really true to that universe.
And so hopefully it unlocks more potential for their powers, and we actually get to see Jedi's like jumping over massive buildings and cutting
right.
AT-ATs
in
half.
Basically like either like picking up shit with their mind, they're like jumping over shit or throwing shit.
Right.
It all has to do with like projectiles.
I like that shit, man.
I love it too, man. I love it. Like, don't, dude, you know that. You know, yeah, yeah, I love yeah. projectiles. Like, that's one of my favorite things. Unless they're being lobbed by North Korea.
True.
I don't like those kinds of projectiles. All right, cool, man. So Star Wars, we can't wait. December. One of the great things in my life right now is that, you know, my birthday is in late December, and every year I can basically go see a Star Wars movie for my birthday.
Right. Awesome.
You know, last year it was Rogue One. The year before that, it was Force Awakens. This year, it's going to be The Last Jedi. So,
hell yeah.
I never have to think about what to do for my birthday, probably ad infinitum, now that Disney's in control.
Do you think they did that in part to, like, kind of, for us, fuse the idea of Star Wars with Christmas forever? Whereas Christmas equals Star Wars? Because I'm all for that.
I mean, it's a very clear identity. I think that, you know, you have, isn't it like you have two big movie times of the year, which is summer and Christmas,
right?
Or Thanksgiving weekend, I think.
That's true.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think they thought about it and they were like, you know, where does this fit? And I think that obviously it's great for Christmas. You know, it's something that families can go do together. You know, you gather with your friends, people that you haven't seen in a while. You go see the Star Wars movie.
Totally.
Yeah, I think it makes perfect sense.
Cool.
Before Star Wars, though, there's something else that's awesome coming this year, and for which we also got a trailer this week that I'm fucking so excited about. Thor Ragnarok.
Yes.
You saw the trailer?
Yes.
Dude, what did you think?
I was blown away. I thought it looked amazing. It looked super colorful. It looked
epic. It looks fun as hell.
Yeah, and it looks, more than anything else, it looks like so much effing fun.
Yeah.
I can't wait. This trailer got me more hyped up than the Star Wars. The Star Wars got me all teary-eyed and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but it's too, maybe it's too teasery for
right.
me to be like, oh. But the Thor Ragnarok, yeah, it blew me away. I imagine you feel the same.
Dude, right off the bat, Led Zeppelin, Immigrant Song.
That's
you know,
right, yeah.
Like, it just sounds awesome. And, like, as soon as it started, I was like, oh, shit, like, this is, like, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right, totally.
You know, they're going in this awesome, like, really fun direction. And the content of the trailer confirmed that. And I think it's really cool because I think it might be, they might make this movie kind of a counterpoint to Civil War, which was a much darker, straight-faced, drearier movie.
Makes sense, yeah.
You know, and they're just kind of like bringing the fun with this one.
I'm all for that.
So I'm super, super stoked. The trailer was chock full of content. There was so much going on.
Yeah.
I mean, you had, well, Loki, of course, is in it.
Right.
The Executioner, I don't know if you noticed that, for whom they cast Carl Urban, and he looks amazing.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Yeah. I love Carl Urban.
Yeah, there's like 1 second, you know, of him in the trailer. Valkyrie, Tessa Thompson from Westworld.
Nice.
And from Creed. By the way, if you haven't seen Creed, man, go watch Creed.
I haven't seen Creed or Westworld.
It's really? You haven't seen Westworld?
Nah, just the first two episodes.
That comes as a huge surprise. I really loved Westworld, especially towards the ending. And Creed, I think, was one of my favorite movies of that year. I think it was 2015 when it came out, or 2016.
Yeah.
Love that movie.
Nice.
Go check it out.
I will.
So yeah, Tessa Thompson as Valkyrie. Dude, Jeff Goldblum the Grandmaster.
Hell yeah.
He looks amazing. And for me, he really called back like Benicio del Toro
right.
in Guardians as the Collector.
The Collector,
and they're, you know, they're part of, like, they're both like elders of the universe, immortal,
yeah.
fucking whatever.
Yeah.
Dude, Hela. Cate Blanchett.
Oh, yeah. She looks hot.
Hella good.
Yeah, sorry.
Pardon the pun. Yeah. I mean, if you haven't seen this trailer yet, go check it out. Like, I was like screaming when I saw it. I was like, yes, yes, yes. This looks awesome. And of course, at the ending.
The big payoff. Yeah.
Hulk comes out like in gladiator gear.
Dude, Thor's face and his reaction to seeing
it's
Hulk.
It's the best because I think it's exactly the reaction that we had. You know, like he's supposed to fight this guy, but he comes out and he's like, yes! And I felt exactly the same.
I know him from work.
That shit's so good. So awesome trailer, man. I'm going to be like reading up on and like refreshing my knowledge of, you know, the Ragnarok storyline, going back to Avengers Disassembled. I'm gonna check out the 80s, you know, Ragnarok.
Yeah,
I'm gonna check out Planet Hulk.
I was gonna say they threw in Planet Hulk in there too,
exactly,
so,
which is awesome, you know. And the thing that I just got into now is Thor the Unworthy. And that's where you see Thor with the short hair and shit.
Yeah.
And this is a comic that's being published now. It's 5 issues in. And I just got it on Comixology. And it looks awesome. Like, the art style looks awesome. So I'm really stoked to, just read a bunch of Thor, man. Read some Hulk. And get ramped up for this movie.
I can't believe this movie is directed by what's-his-face, your boy from What We Do in the Shadows.
I know.
That's
I'm
so
really
crazy.
Excited.
Yeah, same.
Well, I mean, they've had good experiences, you know, like the Russo brothers delivered arguably the best Marvel film.
That's true. And they came from TV, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think they were like, yeah, you know, like, we give these guys a chance, like guys who have a good, unique vision, smart guys. And they deliver, man. And it looks like Thor Ragnarok is going to be the mega jam.
Yeah, absolutely. The mega jam. I love it.
Really excited for that. So, leaving stuff that's coming up to stuff that's actually recently available now. Dude, so last week I found out that Attack on Titan Season 2.
Wait, pause.
What?
You totally skipped on us discussing Justice League.
Oh, yeah, I don't want to talk about that, man.
All right, fine.
Basically, it's like see it to believe it. I'm going to go watch Justice League probably on opening night, but I'm not – yeah. I mean, DC really, I think, has a lot to prove. So I hope they do okay. I think if you compare, for example, the Justice League trailer to Thor Ragnarok, I think one of them, in my opinion, has the right vision. Justice League, I think they're trying, you know, I think they're trying to make their shit a little bit more fun.
Yeah.
But it's still not quite entirely there.
A lot of Bruce Wayne one-liners and...
Yeah, and like the Aquaman, like, buddy thing going on.
I like that.
Yeah, no, that's... We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Even I'm a big fan of Dawn of Justice. Not so much Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
But even I was like kind of ho-hum about that trailer.
But I think it's like the same thing... It's like, oh, in the trailer, I don't like how they're like, Oh, The Flash, he runs fast, blah, blah, blah. Cyborg, Aquaman. It feels like just like in BVS where they're showing you like the security cam videos.
Don't bring that up. Heroes. Don't bring that up, dude. Don't bring that up. I hate that scene.
I shouldn't twist the knife.
All right, anyway, Attack on Titan.
Yeah, but if you guys want to check it out, the Justice League trailer is out. Go have a look.
You're not going to watch it. You don't care. Let's face it. All right.
All right. So, dude, Attack on Titan has been up, and you can watch it on Hulu. You can watch it on Crunchyroll. You can watch it in a couple of other places.
Is it subtitled only?
It seems like so far it's subtitled only.
No! All right, fine.
There will be a dub, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Relatively soon.
Yeah.
So I'm watching it both on Hulu and Crunchyroll. Sometimes Hulu crashes, so I switch over.
Really?
Ooh. Yeah, it happened to me today. Right. So, dude, Attack on Titan is an anime that came out a couple years ago and took the world completely by storm. It's a shonen manga that is a manga or a Japanese comic geared towards young men. And what that means is that it has a lot of action, but I think Attack on Titan might be my favorite shonen of all time, just because if I were reading it, which I'm not, I would just be like turning the pages until there's nothing else there, and that's the way that I consumed the first season of Attack on Titan when I first watched it a few years ago. Dude, I haven't marathoned a series like this maybe ever. Like, I was just watching. Well, I mean, they're only right. Half-hour episodes, too.
Yeah.
So I was just like, you know, just play, 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 play. I just couldn't stop because it's so compelling. I mean, it's like stirring stuff. This is like, you know, I think people complain nowadays about The Walking Dead, how the zombies don't seem like a threat anymore and there's like no tension whenever
right.
there's like a hordes of zombies in the scene because they know that they're going to get out of it. Attack on Titan is the complete opposite. It's kind of zombie-ish. So it takes place in a future world in which this horde of gigantic humanoid zombie-esque creatures have kind of like really ravaged humanity. Humanity managed to kind of fall back into one large nation state, I would call it,
mm-hmm.
behind these huge walls that protect them from these titans. And the first episode of the series starts with finally one of these creatures breaking through this wall, you know, and the chaos that ensues.
These creatures are really disturbing.
Extremely
to look
disturbing,
at.
Yeah. Yeah. They look like people that are like knocked out on some kind of drug.
Yeah.
That have this like insatiable appetite to feed on humans.
Yeah.
and who almost do it kind of laughingly. So it's really disturbing. It's really bizarre. It's extremely violent. It's very gory, but it makes for some incredibly gripping action, because in this world, what the humans have done is that they've really organized and they've created kind of an army to deal with these titans, and they've equipped the soldiers with something called the omnidirectional maneuvering system, or 3D maneuvering system, which basically allows them to move around like Spider-Man, you know?
It's like an exoskeleton they wear, right?
No, it's like gear. It's like something they wear on their waist.
Wouldn't that be like an exoskeleton?
No, because that would be like the whole body maybe.
Oh,
something
okay.
like that. All yeah, right. But it's mechanical gear, and that's part of the tension, that it can stop working at any point, you know? And anyway, they move around in the air, like going around and like trying to take these titans down. And it's so exciting. I friggin' love it, man. Like it never
is.
Gets old seeing that, you know, it never gets old. And of course, you know, as an anime, anything is possible. I mean, now we're kind of used to like the possibility of our favorite character dying in a series because we all watched Game of Thrones.
Right.
But for a long time, this was kind of the jurisdiction of anime, you know?
Right.
That suddenly the lead character can die, or his best friend or his girlfriend or something. You know, this person can be very abruptly and very suddenly dead. And so that's really cool. The other thing that I really enjoy about it is that it shows kind of humanity at its best, you know, in its darkest moments. Like it has like this like rousing, like get pumped kind of thing about it.
Yeah.
Tons of like self-sacrifice scenes.
Right.
You know, tons of men and women charging into danger, you know, doing what's right for the cause. Yeah, it's awesome, man. This is an awesome series. Second season just came out. They're releasing it very slowly. I just watched the third episode today. And it's, I would say, as good as the first season. It's completely balls to the wall, you know, high octane action. And the other cool thing is that the origin of these creatures, these titans, is a mystery. So besides the action and trying to fight them and defend people from them, you know, you have the other part of the story, which is trying to figure out what the hell they are and what the hell's going on. And so far, season two goes into a really cool direction with that.
Nice.
So did you see the first season?
I did. And yeah. I had a similar experience where I pretty much binge watched it in, I would say, within 36 hours. I saw the entire
really?
Thing.
Yeah. That, dude, that's even more hardcore than I did.
Yeah, I
but
like
hats
saw
off. I understand.
I saw half and I was like, oh, I need a nap. And then like 3 hours later, I got up and I was like, all right, you know, Cocoa Puffs and Attack on Titan. And it was a really good time. I pretty much feel the same way you do about it. It gripped me from the beginning, gripped me, whatever. And it didn't let go, man. And then it's
it
yeah,
gripped you like a titan grips a fresh piece of meat,
right. And dude, it didn't let go. And yeah, it's like it's nonstop action. There's a lot of drama, a lot of crying.
Yeah,
but I mean, shit, people.
It's super intense.
Yeah, it's super intense. Exactly, people. These giant ugly things are naked and charging through city walls and picking up moms and chomping on them, and it's like, oh my god, what's going on here?
Yeah.
It's a very hopeless situation, so of course everybody's constantly breaking down, you
yeah.
know.
There's
understandably
a lot of breakdowns.
So
yeah, there's a lot of people that just like lose it.
Yeah. But then they there's get, like, people that lose it and then they pull it together,
bounce
for
back.
That glorious moment of like
that's what it's all about.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, it's really good. If you like that kind of stuff, you've already seen Attack on Titan, probably.
Yeah, the one thing where I think the first season was much better than the second one is the music.
Oh yeah,
and
oh, that's disappointing to hear.
That takes us to our next and final topic, which is anime music.
Yes.
Yeah, the intro is good. It's not bad. But it's nowhere nearly as incredible
no.
as the intro in the
they
first season.
They changed the song?
Well, you know, they changed it already in the first season.
No?
Yeah, yeah. They had gone, yeah, like halfway through they changed it. But, you know, the really, like, I guess they're just not going to go back to, like, the really amazing song that they had, like, for the greater part of the first season, which is incredible.
Yeah.
And the outro, I don't care about. The outro of this season of Attack on Titan is awesome. In that, you know how the Zelda games sometimes at the beginning show you what looks like very ancient drawings?
Yeah.
Of the kind of mythology behind it?
Yeah.
Attack on Titan does the same thing with the end credits in this season. So they show you these images, you know, like they look like medieval images or something that really kind of tease what's to come in the story. And they're really cool. So
oh, cool.
I think this is maybe the end sequence or outro for an anime that I've paid the most attention to. Because I'm always like looking at these images and I'm like, oh shit, what does that mean?
Right.
Like, what are they trying to tell me?
Cool, man.
But, Gil, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. You and I are generally considered to be badasses.
Yes, this is true.
As badasses, we tend to gravitate towards heavy music.
Correct.
However, we both love Taylor Swift's 1989.
I do, yes.
Yeah, it's a great album. And in addition to that, we both love anime music.
Indeed.
Specifically the intros and outros to TV shows.
Yes.
I've been trying to figure out exactly what it is about them that is so compelling to me. Still working on that. But I can tell you that I love, for example, the intro to Lane.
I don't remember that.
It's like a really... You watched Lane?
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah. So it's Serial Experiments Lane is the full name. Really, really cool anime from the 90s. Check it out if you haven't yet. Mm. So it's kind of like this mellow, like Natalie Merchant-ish kind of song. It's in English.
Yeah.
It's a really nice one. And I listened to this song like over and over and over again. I've been listening to it for years. And yeah, I just really like it. It's like, you know, I have it saved like in my YouTube page, whatever. So I check it out. I love the intro to The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya. This is another one of my all-time favorite animes. It's really incredible.
Nice.
If you want to check it out. You watched Please Save My Earth, right?
Nope.
No?
No.
But what you know that? About it. I've told you about it, I think.
Is that the moon thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the outro to that show is unbelievable. Another really, really beautiful, really haunting song. I don't know. I mean, it's, and of course the classics, you know, the intro to Cowboy Bebop, Evangelion,
yeah,
Razafan, more recently the intro to Tokyo Ghoul. I think I sent you that link. Remember that song that like blows up like a few seconds into it?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. That's yeah. Right. I do remember. I gotta hear it again though.
Yeah. So, Steins Gate. Dude, the intro to Steins Gate is also incredible.
I've been slacking on that. I got to jump on Steins Gate.
You got to get back into it, man. I'm just about to finish it now. I have no idea
it's held
why.
Up?
Oh, my God. Absolutely. That show just keeps getting like, it's like, you know, you go deeper and deeper into the rabbit hole. It
yeah.
just gets more and more incredible. So, yeah, those are some of my favorites. What about you?
Well, for me, I'm sure you can guess what mine are.
I mean, I have a feeling.
So the ultimate anime intro song all time.
I can't wait.
Hikaru kumo jikiru ke fly away.
Ke fly away.
Karada juu ni hirokaru baro nama.
That was beautiful.
That was good.
Dragon Ball Z, for those of you that don't know.
Head Chala. Shame on you if you don't know.
Amazing intro song. And I have to say, like, to this day, there are few songs that make me want to dance as much as that song.
Yeah. Yeah. Say, I want to dance. I want to make love. I'll do anything to
everything.
That song.
Anything and everything.
Yeah.
I just want that to be the soundtrack to our lives.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Riding around in a cloud. Doing good. Being strong.
Yes.
Eating
yes.
right.
Yeah. Eating right. Absolutely. Or eating sushi or, you know, whatever.
So besides Dragon Ball Z,
I love all their intro songs, by the way, including Dragon Ball GT. I know everybody hates that song, but I love it. It all makes me feel so happy inside. Besides that, of course, the classic, almost everybody I'm sure agrees with me, both songs to Death Note.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
The first one was badass. The second one, there's something about like the way they matched it with the images, like when the screen comes in with the song and then it they're showing you like Kira maniacally laughing
yeah.
while it's like,
yep.
I was like, oh my God, I love this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are among my favorites of
cool.
all time.
Cool. Cool. So be sure to check out the blog because we will have a post going up at the same time that we post this podcast about some of our favorite anime intros. I mean, it's impossible just to pick a few.
Yeah.
We're going to do our best. And I hope you enjoy it. Anything else, Gil?
If you guys want to drop us a line on Twitter, we'd be happy to hear from you. Maybe there's a topic or something you want us to discuss in the future. I am at @align_johns, @JOHNS, Lewis.
At @Bigori80, that's BIGORRI80, by the way, 80, the year that Empire Strikes Back came out, you know. And that's it, guys.
Oh, yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
Wait, I want to throw something in real quick. The spirit of, you know, we spoke a lot about anime. Elijah Wood does the voices in the dubbing for one of the characters in The Wind Rises.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Had to throw that in there.
I still haven't seen that yet.
I haven't either. I'm kind of ashamed that
I'm
haven't.
Really looking forward. I hope I can see it this week. I actually bought it for a friend. I don't think he's seen it, so I'm just going to invite myself over so we can watch it.
Cool.
All right, man. So that's it for our second episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you like what we do, subscribe to our show on iTunes. If you don't like iTunes, you can also check us out on SoundCloud or also on the blog. We post the MP3 directly. And yeah, you know, stay in touch. Let us know what you like, what you don't like. We're very honored to have you as listeners and followers. And until next week, ja mata.
Hi.
Bye, all.